So I'm interviewing Peter Tulich. It's the 4th of May today, isn't it?
Forces.
4th of May at Longford, Tasmania.
That's correct.
96 Wellington Street, Longford.
Yes.
So Peter, we'll start off. If you could just tell me your full name and your date of birth and place of birth.
My name is Peter Tulich. I was born on the 18th of the 12th, 1927, in a town on the island of Korčula, and the island is situated between Split and Dubrovnik in the Adriatic Sea.
And can you talk a bit about your life growing up there before you migrated? So how many brothers and sisters you had?
I had one brother, John. One brother, John. Mary was the elder sister. Jerka was next, and then myself. And we all lived in Blatha with our grandfather and grandmother, because Dad came to Australia in 1928, and we followed in 1935. The reason for that is that there was no assisted passages in those days. We had to, or Dad had to save up enough money to bring Mum and the two boys to Australia, and then in 1938 my two sisters migrated because there was no funds to get everybody out at the one time. So we were a split family for about 10 years, unfortunately, but that was the way of life in those days.
What kind of house did you grow up on your island?
Well, it was built of stone. The local limestone, roughly built, and not well. It was built by tradesmen to a point, and the men of those days built what they could themselves, because money was pretty scarce from what I can gather. And the local stone and the local bush wood for the roof, and tiles later on, yes, but before that it was just well, limestone slate. And that was on the roofs, not tied down like normal tiles. It was just loose. Sometimes with a strong wind, you'd get one or two blown off. But oh well, that was way of life in those days.
What are some of your earliest memories as a young child?
Well, the memories that I have as a young child is the memories I have where we had our vineyard in Borova. That was on the sea. We used to go swimming and fishing, and well, we used to help my grandfather when he was clearing new ground to pick up the roots of the trees that he dug up and stack it up. And in those days we used to stack it up to make our own a brick kiln to make limestone for the grapes, because in those days nothing else was used but bluestone, lime, and then dusting with sulphur. And I have no knowledge of anything else that they ever used in that particular time.
Describe the landscape.
landscape. It was a jutting out from the, it was, how could I describe it? It was a peninsula out off the main island, and the water surrounded us completely. The view was magnificent because you looked across the Adriatic towards the islands further up north towards Split, and wherever we went around that particular part, it was just gorgeous, beautiful. Something that I couldn't forget ever. You know, it was when I went back in years after about 67 years in Australia, I just couldn't get over the beautiful scenery and the beautiful landscape. It was just magnificent in my eyes. And more or less as I remembered it when I left there at the age of 7.
And how was it growing up with your brother John? Can you think of some?
Well, John and I, well, we grew up together in Blatter, but John helped my grandfather. He was 6 years older than I, and he helped my grandfather more, and I didn't see much of him. And of course, there wasn't a lot of schooling in those days, and John skipped the school as much as he could because he didn't seem to like school, but he certainly enjoyed being with his grandfather and helping him clear the land for further grape vines.
You described something yesterday about what it took to plant one grape vine. Can you just
yes, it's a rocky island, very rocky, and there was times when it would take you all day to clear a patch of a metre square to plant one grapevine. I never had the experience, but this is what my grandfather experienced, and my dad, before he came to Australia, he was also growing grapes. And of course The catalyst, I suppose you could describe that, when Pronospera, that is a disease that came into the roots of the grapes and they died out, and there was no work, no factories to go to, you had to look for somewhere better, and Dad decided to come to Australia and try and better his life and eventually bring his family out to Australia.
You just want to, how are you going to sit? Are you right like that? Yeah, that might be better, just so that you can rest your hands off.
So I'm not making a noise. Okay.
So talk a bit, you mentioned yesterday about the Catholic Church. You were and some memories of the church in your hometown.
Yes, it was a church that was built back about four centuries ago, and being strict Catholics, the children had to go to Mass of a Sunday, and if we went and weren't accompanied by an adult, and we skipped going to church, we were asked who performed the service, and if we made a mistake, well, we more or less paid for it by getting a couple of whacks along the bottom. But anyhow, it was enjoyable. It was a part of life, I suppose.
What did the church look like? Do you remember the service or what they looked like, what they wore? The priests? Or?
Yeah, well, yes, they wore a white cape in those days when they performed the ceremony. And they used to get on the pulpit and say their piece. Everybody listened. Everybody was pretty well church-going people. And churches were full. It wasn't a huge church, but it was quite sufficient for the people of Blato, because they used to hold, early morning service and then mid-morning and then sometimes towards lunch service. So people were accommodated in that way.
Will that fridge stop or will it keep running like that?
It will keep running for a while. Do you want me to switch it off? I can't.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Oh. That's all right. We'll just... Okay, probably won't impact too much. But it's amazing what you have to be aware of when you're recording.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned something about the colours in the... Not altar boys, but the assistants to the priest.
Oh, the assistants to the priest. My grandfather was one of the gentlemen who assisted the priest, and they wore white capes, and there was evidently two sections. One was a red brotherhood, and the other one was the blue brotherhood. My grandfather belonged to the blue, but I can't explain to you. I have not sufficient knowledge to be able to say what brotherhood it was, but it was a part of the church and the ceremony, and they used to come in and assist a priest and escort the priest to the altar and that sort of thing.
So when you were migrating, do you have any memories around that preparation and how you were feeling then, like?
Well,
did you understand what was going on?
I did to a degree. I was excited because I was going to see my father. I didn't know my dad till I come to Australia, and I always knew him as Dad without legs, because there was only a photo of him, half of the body. And I was very excited that I was going to see my dad for the first time. And, of course, Mum was preparing clothes and different things for us to take across, because we didn't have a lot of clothing, but we had sufficient. And, of course, we had to have a little bit better clothing to come to Australia.
Do you remember John around that time? Like, what? I suppose you were both just excited brothers.
We were both excited, yes. John was excited. He was looking forward to coming to Australia because, we heard it was a land of opportunity. And he was hoping that he would be able to better himself in Australia, so he was excited as well.
You mentioned your sisters came later. Why did you go separately? And what was?
Well, the reason that my sisters came out, because as I said to you earlier, we had no assisted passages in those days, and you had to save up enough money to be able to pay for your fare to Australia. And Dad came at a bad time. It was the Depression years, and before the war, not a lot of work. So it took him quite some time to save up enough money for Mum and the two boys to come out. But the sisters, they had to wait their turn. They stayed with grandfather and grandmother in Blato, and they had to wait their turn till we had sufficient funds to be able to bring them out.
Did you Do you know where your father was when he was here before you arrived?
He was in Sydney. I don't know what part of it was down in Bourke Street, I do believe. Bourke Street, Darlinghurst. And he had a job in what is now Tattersall's Hotel. It was known as Adams Hotel in those days. And he was lucky enough to get a job as a kitchen hand, washing dishes and cleaning up and assisting the chefs in the kitchen.
So that's what he did for...
He did that for some time. When we came out to Australia, he did that for quite some time.
So do you remember anything about the boat? That would have been exciting.
It was, yes. We had a lot of fun on the boat, particularly going from Dubrovnik to Naples. And we spent... It's rather strange to think that we spent 3 or 4 days in Naples because the war with Abyssinia was going on and they were loading troops to send to Abyssinia, which I think now is Eritrea. I'm not too sure of that. But nevertheless, we were delayed coming to Australia because of that, and I remember the troops parading and all the blessings that were going on so that they could go and beat the daylights out of the Abyssinian people, I should imagine, which I thought at a later date what the heck was war about, but never mind, that's... just a thought.
What sort of things do you remember on the boat?
On the boat, well, the things I remember mostly is coming through the Suez Canal and the pyramids, Sphinx, and things like that that were visible because the terrain there is pretty flat. It's not hilly or anything. And... it was rather exciting to think that we were going through the Suez Canal. I only heard of it, but never thought I'd experience the excitement of going through the Suez and then onto the Red Sea and down through Aden and into Colombo. Colombo was the first place where I seen darker people than myself, and I always thought that the world was full of white people, but nevertheless I found out that the world was full of many races. And the excitement of seeing Selenese people dive in from the wharves when people threw down money, and they would dive for it and follow it right down and come up with the pennies or whatever people threw into the ocean. And then came Perth. Well, we stayed at Fremantle. And from Fremantle to Melbourne, to Adelaide actually, the rough seas. It was so rough that nobody was allowed on the decks below. Everybody had to be upstairs. And nobody was interested in... eating because they were that sick with the rough seas. It was huge. I've never experienced since any seas like the Great Australian Bight. It certainly was rough and high. So then, of course, we went on to Melbourne and Sydney. We arrived in Sydney on the 21st of November 1935 at about 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. And that was the first time in my life that I saw my dad for the first, in, well, 7 years of my life. Yes, it was very exciting. And we berthed at the Finger Wharf at Woolloomooloo Bay.
What did you think of Sydney? It would have been sunrise coming in.
Oh yes, it was beautiful. The harbour, and of course the harbour bridge, that was something to look at, because the sunrise on the bridge early in the morning, it was something spectacular. Very good, lovely harbour.
You've been happy to get off the boat too?
Oh, well, yes. We were on the boat for, 3 weeks from the time I think we left Naples to Sydney. So we were keen to get off the boat and get on back onto land, especially after we crossed the Great Australian Bight. We were glad we didn't want to see any more of that.
So where did you went to Bourke Street?
Went to, no, Dad then moved to Forbes Street in Woolloomooloo. We lived at just up from the Finger Wharf, or I suppose about 200 or 300 yards from where we landed with our family. And then later on, when we were able to look around, we went on to Paddington, and from Paddington we finished up in West Street, Darlinghurst, where we were next door to another Yugoslav family, Mr. and Mrs. Sinkovic. They were also from the town of Blato, and Mum and Mrs. Sinkovic and Mr. Sinkovic were able to communicate, because Mum had no knowledge of English, and poor old soul, she passed away with very little knowledge of English, because she was always on farms. Never, she was able to get around and communicate to a degree, but not nothing like living in the city.
What sort of person was your mother? What are your memories?
My memories of Mum is that she was a good person, gentle person, hard-working person, always willing to help out, but strict. If you fell out of line, well, she would chastise you and make sure that you did the right thing. But she... very good person, very good lady to me, and the family. God rest her soul.
And your father?
Father.
How was that initially, getting to know him? Was that?
It was a bit hard. In the, you know, he didn't know what I was like. I didn't know what he was like. But eventually, we sized one another up, and we were able to get on very well. Dad was a softy. He never ever laid a hand on us children. He always told us that, what he expected. And yes, he was very gentle, very helpful, and occasionally he would managed to get up a little bit of temper, but I think it was only like a blue-tongued lizard changed just to let you know that he was around, you know. Yes.
You you would have seen quite an Aboriginal population then. Would that be right in that area?
In that area, in Sydney itself, yes. Around Woolloomooloo, Surrey Hills, and Redfern, we used to go from West Street. Mum and I used to walk down on a Friday to the Paddy's Market to get as much supplies as we could. And through Surrey Hills and down towards the markets, there was a fairly heavy population of Aboriginal people. They were very nice, could say good day to you, and helpful if you got lost or anything like that. Yes, they were just different colour, but human beings, quite good people.
And you would have been to school there? You would have got
I went to school first when I arrived in Australia for the first few months down to Plunkett Street School, which I do believe is still there. And then from there I went to Paddington, only for a very short time, Paddington Public School, and then to West Street in Darlinghurst.
How was school? How did you fit in?
Difficult. I had no knowledge of English, and if I did speak pidgin English, it wasn't good English. I remember one time the teacher at West Street asked me to get up and read, and I did get up and read, but I wasn't reading in English, I was reading in how I would have pronounced the words in my native language. And after a couple of minutes, the teacher got that disgusted that she took the book off me and told me to sit down, and that was the last episode that ever I read in that classroom. But it was very difficult, and I could understand the frustration of the teacher, because nobody could understand what I was talking about or reading, because I would see, like, in our language, we write the word as we pronounce the word, and I've tried to read English as I was pronouncing, and it just doesn't work out. Totally different. And when you get double L's and double R's and all that sort of thing, well, how do you? You know, because it's not known in our language. Is just plain. So, yes, I've had some funny experiences in the classroom, but after a few years, it all worked out.
You picked up English?
Oh, yes. Well, I picked up English pretty fairly quickly. Still, after two or three years, I can still remember me saying wounded instead of wounded. But after a while, you got the twang and the correct pronunciation. And then when I went to high school, it was a different kettle of fish.
Where was high school?
Hurlston.
Okay, so let's talk about the journey from Darlinghurst.
Well, from Darlinghurst, see...
Unless you want to say anything here at this point about Darlinghurst. Sorry, you just go ahead. Are we ready to move to southwest Sydney now, do you think?
No, not quite, no, because from Darlinghurst, you see, there was my brother who was of working age. Sister Mary, she was of working age, and my other sister Yerka, she was getting towards the working age, and there was not sufficient work in Sydney especially for people who couldn't speak English. So Mum and Dad, in their wisdom, borrowed as much as they could, enough to buy 5 acres of land in St John's Road, Canley Vale. And there we went and started farming. John and Mary and Yerka were able to be employed on the farm. And if we didn't sell a lot of the produce, but we were able to at least grow enough vegetables for our own use. And of course we started growing tomatoes and cabbages and beans and things like that, and sent them to the city markets, which augmented our income, or Dad's income, by a substantial amount. Not a huge amount, but substantial. And from there we were able to move on to a bigger farm in Green Valley Road, where we when the war started, and then we grew tomatoes and cabbages, beans, onions and things like that for the army, for the armed forces, under contract. And that we did for a number of years until the war finished, and then we started growing for ourselves and the city markets.
And just so, at Canley Vale, were there other Yugoslav families?
Yes, quite a St John's Road was almost full of Yugoslav people at that time. Oh yes, there would have been, I'd say, the best part of 15 families along St John's Road, all farming and pursuing agriculture.
Do you remember some of those names?
Yeah, well, there was Mr. and Mrs. Sardlich. They then moved to Leppington. There was Mr. and Mrs. Kunjusic, Maruzic, Mr. and Mrs. Maruzic. There was Mr. and Mrs. Vitsilich, Mr. and Mrs. Barnovich, Mr. and Mrs. Millat. All these families later on moved out to Rossmore or Leppington or in that area.
So they had to keep moving because of the land fertility? Is that
well,
right?
You see, when we were fortunate, we bought 5 acres, but the other people, the blocks were 3 acres. And once you used that land up for tomatoes, it was no good for repetition because they got a disease. So you had to follow new ground. And once you wore out the 3 or 5 acres, you went to look for a better quality bit of land facing the sun so you could get early cropping. And you followed the new ground, because you knew that if you planted in the virgin soil, that there'd be no disease.
Can you remember, so you would have shared farming methods at Canley Vale, you would have learnt perhaps, like how did your dad learn farming?
From other people. We were always sharing. Not only were we sharing knowledge, but if somebody had a plough, somebody had a horse, somebody had something to contribute, we would help one another out. It was a more or less a bartering system. All right, well, I'll come and plant your tomatoes tomorrow, but in a few days' time, will you come and help make tomato beds or do something else or plough the ground for me so that we can all progress? Yeah, it was a lot of sharing and knowledge, especially. People had one aim in life, and that was to better themselves. And they pursue that avenue by sharing their knowledge because, well, what was the point in me knowing something and not sharing it with somebody else? Because they were down and out, and you know, there was, you had no option really.
How long were you in County Vale?
Oh, we were there for about 2 years, two or three years, yes, and then we moved on to Green Valley. We were there in about end of 1939, 40, something like that.
And just what do you remember about Canley Vale? How old were you there?
Well, I was in. I went to primary school there at Canley Vale. I was in. I started in fourth class, fifth, and then sixth class, and then passed the exam to sufficient to go to Hurlston Agricultural College.
And was John at Hurlston, or was he working?
No, John was. John hardly ever went to school in Australia. He did go to night school for a while, but then John was a farmer, and he helped Mum and Dad with the farming chores. And then later on, I joined them at Green Valley. And then from Green Valley, we moved on to Kookaburra Road, Preston's.
So I'll just take you back to Green Valley, because you talked yesterday about some of the families in Green Valley. How big was your property, and maybe how did the landscape look?
I think, if I remember rightly, we had 34 acres, undulating.
Where? What streets?
In Canley Vale Road. I was going to.
That's something
near
Wilson.
It was, our land was between Cow Pasture Road and Wilson Road, and on the right hand side, opposite where Nelson Phillips had his property. The people that I remember there was a poultry farmer. He was of Dutch descent, Mr. Skillings. Then there was Mr. and Mrs. Costa in Wilson Road. They just moved in around about much the same time as we did. And the Costa family and myself more or less grew up together, and Jim was my mate from the Costa family, but they were all very good and friendly people. I was one of the family, because every time I went up there, Mrs. Costa would invite me in for dinner or tea or whatever was going. She would sit me down and, right, oh, Pete, now hop into it. And, yes, a marvellous lady. She brought up quite a number of children, but a very good family. I can't speak highly enough of Mr. and Mrs. Costa. Mr. Costa used to come and help. If we were stuck, or we would go and help them if they were stuck. Yes, we had a very good relationship. We'd go rabbiting together through Hinchinbrook. In those days, Hinchinbrook was a pastoral holding. Sheep were running, and cattle. And then a part of Hinchinbrook was taken up by the Air Force or the Armed Forces, and they built the Hoxton Park Aerodrome that was at the outbreak of the war. They had all the old machinery, rotary hose, everything they could get hold of in order to build particular airfield.
Where do they get that equipment from?
From the farmers, from local contractors, rotary hoes, tractors, anything they could get hold of. There were a few bulldozers at a later date when the American forces arrived in Australia. They brought a lot of their equipment and they were able to finish the airfield there. But before that, I never saw a bulldozer in my whole life until the Americans came and levelled the airfield off. And it was quite exciting because when it was finished, we had Spitfires, we had the American planes. It just escapes me, one of the popular ones that were around. They used to...
Not B-52s?
No. They were mostly fighters, light planes, not heavy bombers or anything like that. No, oh, gee whiz.
Okay, so what you might remember...
Later on.
You can ring me.
Yes. But it was a popular... A well-known plane that was down at the airfield, and they were camouflaged in between the trees. And yes, there was gravel paths going in all directions, troops there, and air personnel. Of course, we as kids used to be able to go and sticky beak, but anybody else was strictly out of bounds.
Did they pay for the equipment or did they, you just give it to them?
Oh, no. It was paid by hourly rates, and whatever time you put into it, they paid you accordingly. But no, they didn't. They didn't just commandeer it and say, right, this is ours. No, they were fair, I'd say.
So you went rabbiting. What sort of things did you do? And can you describe a typical rabbiting adventure?
Well, first of all, we had no guns. If somebody had a pea rifle, that was a pretty good sort of equipment. And mostly, there was that many rabbits in those days around Hinchinbrook that you could walk behind them with a stick a couple of metres long, and you'd go behind the squat, and you see the rabbit in the squat, and you hit him on the head, and while he was working out what happened, you grabbed him and put him in the bag. And, of course, you took him home, baked it. Mrs. Costa used to make the best rabbit spaghetti of anybody in the whole of Australia. It was gorgeous. Very, very nice.
And what did your mother cook?
Well...
When she got a minute.
Well, that's right. Also, well, the... mostly vegetables, and she cooked meat. We ate a lot of stews early in the piece because we weren't able to afford the better cuts of meat. But then Sundays became roasts and a special day for cooking. And the rest of the week, well, we cooked mostly vegetables and chops or steak or something similar. And, of course, we grew quite a few cockerels. And of a Saturday, I would have to chop their heads off and clean them up. And sometimes... we'd have them instead of meat for roast lunch on Sunday. Soups, very popular, because they were able to put a pot of soup on and come back and find it was ready. But of course, there was no electric stoves, and you had to keep the fire moving. And that was the only disadvantage, that made sure that the fire was going all the time.
Can you remember some other families? How did the landscape in Green Valley look? Was it all, what were the main, were there 35-acre farms? Was that the norm, or was, how was it?
No, the 35 acres, there was 5 acres, 10 acres, all sizes. They were cut in different sizes. And Phyllis's, I believe, was around about 600 acres. He grazed. And Hinchinbrook, well, I do believe that used to extend right out to Kemp's Creek to Devonshire Road, the back of Hinchinbrook. And then Pye's Paddock, which was on the corner of Elizabeth Drive and Cow Pasture Road. I do believe that was in a couple of thousand acres as well. That used to also extend out to Kemp's Creek. And the rest of the farms were smaller, 5 acres as you went in towards Liverpool and Cabramatta. And the outskirts, well, of course, they were bigger holdings, and as the demand for land increased, they then cut up to mostly 20-acre sizes. But it, of course, it varied. It depended on the size of the property they were cutting up, and it depended on the terrain of the land.
Do you remember what you paid for the land? What sort of money was?
I can remember Green Valley. There was you could buy plenty of land for 5 to 7 pounds per acre, but in those days, 5 to 7 pounds was hard to come by, so not many people were able to purchase. But it was cheap land. You had to then improve it, fence it, and but when you compare the 5 to 7 pounds, well, like, hard to say what would be the equivalent now.
7 million, maybe. Well, 1 million an acre.
Yes, it is. The land's very expensive now compared. But in the latter years, going towards Preston's, it was the going rate was about £100 per acre, and then it rose to 150. And of course, now it's all history. You can get £5,000 an acre, you know, for good rural land, even well out from Sydney or out from most capital cities. You've got to pay a huge amount of money.
So the Green Valley farming then was quite a mixed cultural
group? Yes, poultry farms, market gardens. There was a gentleman who grew roses for the markets, like bare-rooted roses. There was pigs. I did mention poultry. It was quite common. And generally all sorts. Even fruit growing was still done on the flats at Green Valley and on the flats at Preston's when we first went to live there. There was some beautiful peaches and plums grown on the flats where the freeway runs through from Campbelltown to Liverpool along those flats there, gee whiz, and grapes as well on the opposite side of the Hume Highway. Well, it was everything, all sorts of pursuits in
produce,
yes.
Just before we move to Preston's, can you just tell me who owned the housing estate that is now not called Green Valley, but those six suburbs they built in the late 50s, early 60s? Who owned that land there? Do you remember?
Well, I don't. I do remember it was a huge holding that was a dairy farm at the bottom of Mount Misery as you go along the Cabramatta Creek there. Then it was virgin bush for quite a fair area. Mr. and Mrs. Just escape me for a minute. Hughes had their dairy farm. Now, I just, it escapes me the name of the street that comes in off Hoxton Park Road, where Basil Hughes, and on the opposite side, Alf Cooper had a dairy farm.
Not Cartwright Avenue?
Cartwright Avenue.
Banks Road?
Banks Road, that's correct.
And who had the dairy farm there? Can you just repeat what you just said?
Alf Cooper. And Basil Hughes and his wife, family, had it on the other side of the road. Then there was a gentleman, I used to do a bit of ploughing for him, who had a piggery, quite a substantial piggery. And then there was another piggery on the corner of South Liverpool Road and Banks Road. But gee whiz, I just forget the name of the people. I can visualise them, but I just can't remember. And then that's as far as the Green Valley Estate went, up to Arundel Road, South Liverpool Road, and Banks Road, I think, was the border, and then went back along Hoxton Park Road back to Liverpool.
So your family at this point, are your sisters are out at this point?
Oh, yes.
You're moving to Preston's, so we'll talk about the family deciding to buy land at Preston's and how much you bought and what families were there?
Well, first of all, Mum and Dad went out to Preston's. They bought 20 acres. Then John followed and he bought 20 acres next door. And then I followed and bought 15 acres next door to Dad and Mum. They were in the middle. We had 55 acres between us at Preston's. And we were able to farm that land as individuals for a start. And then we pooled resources and we all had tried to grow big crops. We grew crops of tomatoes of anything up to 20,000-25,000 plants when we were pooling our resources. Sometimes it paid off, sometimes it didn't. It depended on the price in the markets. Sometimes it was a glut and other times reasonable prices. But you had to take that gamble.
So who grew food for the army? Was it at Preston's?
Not at Preston's. That was a Green Valley. That was in the war years of Green Valley, again from about 1940-41 onwards until the war finished.
Now, can you talk a bit about the pricing there?
I couldn't tell you because it was on a contract price. You contracted to put in so many acres at so much per kilo or per pound in those days, and No, I wasn't privy to the negotiations. That was done between my dad, my brother-in-law, and my brother. They were the main ones.
Do you remember where the food was taken to be transferred to the army?
Yes, in the city markets. There was a depot in the city markets, and you had to take a load of whatever it was. Then there was Tillich's at the back of Grace Brothers, where you took your beans to be canned. That's the only places that I know of that they delivered goods to. The depot at the city markets, which was then cordoned off, and a huge area of the city markets was taken up by the compound that the military used.
Was anything shipped from the railway?
Oh, yes. Darling Harbour.
Liverpool Railway?
From Liverpool Railway, not a lot, because if you had a truck, it was quicker, and you didn't spoil the goods by double handling. You put it straight on the truck at the farm. You delivered the goods in good condition at the city markets.
We'll have a break in a minute.
Yes.
Do I have a break now? I'll just stop it now.
If I don't know, we'll. You ready?
Just talk about. We missed the birth of. You had a sister that was born.
My sister Olga is now in Croatia visiting her daughter in Vela Luka and Blato. She was born in Darlinghurst at the Paddington Women's Hospital in Paddington in 1937. Olga was born on the 4th of June, the only child that Mum had in Australia. All the rest of us were born in Croatia.
You mentioned when you were living in Darlinghurst, you remember St Margaret's Hospital being built?
Ah, yes. St Margaret's Hospital at Darlinghurst. I remember it being built. It was one of the biggest buildings around Darlinghurst at the time, and the most modern building that we saw in that area.
What do you recall about it?
The cranes, the first time I've seen cranes on buildings, and cement lorries, and the concrete being pumped up high, and the concrete being lifted up by cranes in huge buckets. Yeah, certainly was an experience for a young fellow like myself.
So, last week we were talking, you were still on the property at Green Valley. How old were you when you met your wife? And can you talk about that?
Well, I met my wife when we were in Canley Vale, as a matter of fact. And my family knew her family and vice versa, and we used to join them occasionally, and they would join us occasionally. And I don't know whether I took a fancy to her or what, but I was following the family wherever they went, and eventually I was able to persuade my wife that she should come over to the Toolage fold. It took a bit of convincing her, but eventually she consented, which is the main thing, eh?
So, and you were living in Green Valley. What was her family name?
Draskovic. Her dad migrated in 1908 from Montenegro, which was a part of the old Yugoslavia. And he went to Cairns and was cutting sugar cane up there, and then decided that he would open up a coffee milk bar, coffee lounge sort of place in Cairns. And that's where he met his wife. And they got married in Cairns, and then eventually came down to Sydney again.
So can you talk about the engagement and how that... Did you have a party and the wedding? Just talk a bit about your romance.
No. now, that's a bit difficult.
And be careful.
Well, that's just it. I've got to be diplomatic, and I better not say the wrong thing, eh, Mother? That's about right. We got engaged when I was still living in Green Valley. We got married while I was still living in Green Valley.
Can I ask about the wedding?
We talked about the wedding yesterday. Therese, you may remember, we said that we got married at a church in Sydney, in St Andrew's Cathedral, and had our wedding reception at one of the clubs, but I still haven't remembered the name of the club. Anyhow, we will one day. We had a family wedding. It was just my family, Olga's family, one or two close friends. Well, we went on our honeymoon to Coolangatta for a few weeks, and then came back and settled down. And we eventually bought the 15 acres of land next to Dad in Preston's, and I got a ready-cut home from Hudson's, ready-cuts in those days, and started building the family home. It took a couple of years to complete, but nevertheless we were able to say we were living on our own piece of ground and our own house.
And was John married then?
John was married then, yes. John had two children by that time, Morris and Jeanette. Yes, I think that's right, yes.
Yeah,
Jenny was a baby when we got married. And then, of course, Tony came at a later date.
Can we, I ask you how John met Mary? Do you know anything about that?
Mary lived in North Queensland, in Mossman, North Queensland. John lived in Green Valley. Some folk from North Queensland came down to Sydney, and John was interested in hearing that there was a young lady in North Queensland that may be suitable, and of course he went up to visit Mary, and they evidently liked one another, because eventually he went back up to Queensland and got married in Mossman, and then came to live in Green Valley. And in Green Valley, Morris was born.
So now we...